to Discover Health, where we help you take control of your health so you can transform your life. Your host, functional medicine expert, Dr. Trish Murray, is on a mission to help every baby boomer age with dignity and grace.
So hello, everyone. This is Dr. Trish Murray from Discover Health Functional Medicine Center, author, physician, and health catalyst speaker. And I am doing a special podcast this afternoon to give an update as best I can from reviewing and reviewing and reviewing as much research as I can on the coronavirus or COVID-19 or coronavirus 2019. So first of all, what the heck is a coronavirus? Well, the coronaviruses have been around a long time, and they are named for the crown-like spikes on their surface. And the human coronaviruses were first identified in the mid-1960s. And there are currently as many as 7 different types of coronaviruses that can infect people. And most of the time, they are mild and moderate upper respiratory tract illnesses like the common cold. And most people get infected with one or more of these viruses at some point in our lives. We've all had the flu, or we've all had the common cold. But what makes this coronavirus disease 2019 or COVID-19 unique is that it is a novel coronavirus. It is new. This is a new coronavirus that has not been previously identified. That's why it's a problem. Our immune systems are not used to this virus. It is not the same as the coronaviruses that commonly circulate among humans. This is considered a novel coronavirus that has now transferred from that's typical in animals, particularly bats, and has been transmitted now from an animal to a human, but then originally, and then now is transmitted from human to human. And that is why it's a problem. Now, if we compare this present new novel coronavirus to previous novel coronaviruses that have been transmitted from animals to humans, there were 2 previous ones we can compare this to. One was called the Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, or SARS, SARS, and another one called the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, abbreviated MERS, MERS. And these are 2 other previous examples of coronaviruses that transmitted from animals to humans. Now let's take a look at those 2 compared to the present one as far as severity and danger. First of all, there were more than 8,000 individuals that developed the severe acute respiratory syndrome, and nearly 800 of them died of the illness, showing a mortality of as high as 10%. Before it was controlled back in 2003, if you remember that. Now, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, continues to resurface here and there sporadically in the world. But we know of a total of 2,465 cases of MERS that existed since 2012, resulting in 850 deaths, which was a mortality rate of 34.5%. Now, folks, let's put things in reality here, because the comparison of these 2 previous novel coronaviruses, the mortality rate was way higher than for COVID-19, the present illness that is now a pandemic. The mortality rate in China that we can get a handle on now is about 2%, folks. And that is not that much higher than the typical influenza epidemic of a particular winter. So let's all make sure we have reality checks here. The problem with this, again, virus, that this new coronavirus, is that none of us have ever seen it before. And so anyone who's exposed to it is essentially going to have some form of illness. Now, the World Health Organization that has reported that severe cases in China had mostly been reported in adults older than 40 years old, and they also had comorbidities of chronic illnesses. And this virus, for whatever reason, is also skewed more towards men, although this pattern may be changing. Now, the initial report of illness from this infection was in 41 people in Wuhan, China. And in that 41 first patients found, 78% of them were male. And the symptoms were 98% of people had fever. 76% of people had a cough, particularly a dry cough. And majority of people, over 50%, had myalgias and fatigue. Things like headache, a productive cough with a lot of sputum, and diarrhea were way less common. The clinical course is characterized by the development of shortness of breath in 55% of patients, which is what causes the most discomfort, of course, and the most concern and fear and problems, especially for people with lung disease. And also on a complete blood count, where you look at someone's blood counts on a lab, 66% showed low lymphocytes or what's called lymphopenia. If anyone, the other thing that's a problem is people are developing, again, mostly a lung disease. And people that develop a pneumonia with this virus are showing abnormal lung imaging, similar to that found in acute respiratory distress syndrome. And when someone has a CAT scan of their lungs, it's showing what's called a ground glass opacities on the CAT scan. So how is this virus spread? How is it transmitted? First of all, the virus is spread mainly from person to person at this point, obviously. It originated, again, in animals such as a bat, but then it is now obviously able to be transmitted from human to human. It is transmitted between people who are in close contact with one another, particularly within about 6 feet, through what are called respiratory droplets that are produced when an infected person coughs or sneezes. Obviously, if they cough or sneeze on you, that's a big problem. But also, if those droplets end up on surfaces, they can last up to about a week. So the problem is that we need to obviously keep surfaces clean. Folks, the air will not infect you. Absolutely not. This has to be from respiratory droplets, or it has to be from you touching droplets on a surface and then touching your own face and transmitting it through your nose, what's called your nose or your nasal pharynx, or your oral cavity. Or obviously coming in contact with someone who is actively coughing and sneezing. This is why we are talking about social distancing. And this is why this is being emphasized, because this is a virus and there is no way to absolutely kill it and eradicate it. It's going to have to run its course. So we need to be able to protect ourselves from transmitting it as best as possible. But remember, the majority of people will get a typical like flu. Those that have chronic underlying illness and the elderly, of course, are at the most risk. So what does the CDC or the Center for Disease Control recommend in order to protect ourselves from this virus? So this is information, again, from the Centers for Disease Control, the World Health Organization, as well as information from a molecular virologist, somebody who studied viruses. And he was one of the first molecular virologists in the world to work on coronaviruses. And his name is James Robb, MD. So what are they recommending? First of all, regarding prevention and hygiene, you need to disinfect commonly touched surfaces every day. Wash your hands multiple times a day using, or if you don't have access to a sink and soap, then use a hand sanitizer. You can buy hand sanitizers, but I realize out there in the world, folks, we're getting problems with limited amounts of things. So you can make your own hand sanitizer by buying isopropyl alcohols, a minimum of 60%, and let's say some aloe vera gel and mixing them together. Also, obviously, we need to not be touching. There should be no touching with people that you aren't obviously in your immediate family or someone that's not ill in your immediate family. No shaking hands, no hugging, if you will, with people that aren't your immediate family or people you are willing to take that risk with. We should be bowing. We should be saying hello and waving. These types of things where we are touching and shaking hands all the time, I get it that it's a habit, but we have to be conscious not to do it. The other thing, folks, is we need to think about ourselves first, of course, just like in any pandemic or any concerning situation, you first are always trained to take care of yourself first and your immediate health. But the second thing that must come to all of our minds is everyone else, others. If you realize that a situation may not be concerning to you, but you must think about your loved ones and you must think of the other people that might be in a environment that you would be in. Could you be possibly transmitting something or, going and visiting, for example, an elderly relative or an elderly friend may not be the time to do that. It absolutely is not the time to do that right now. So don't do it. Now in the medical field, we're using telemedicine and they are using emergency rooms at this point are using telemedicine. If you become ill, the number one thing you should do is not show up at your primary care doctor's office. If you become ill with a dry hacky cough and a fever and myalgias and fatigue, you need to call your doctor's office and ask what to do. There is also presently being developed as far as timing and exactly where to send you, that is not definitive yet, but there are ways to look things up on the internet to understand your symptoms and to determine whether there is a definitive concern for you. And yes, there also are developing ways in which people can get tested without even getting out of your car, but this is very specific to each state. So you're going to want to look it up on the internet in your state. Obviously, airline travel is becoming more and more limited, and people actually should not be traveling. Now, the other thing, folks, is you've got to be able to care for your overall health. The number one thing is, yes, to not touch things and to to cleanse the surfaces and things, of course. But the other thing is, what about your day-to-day overall health? If you have a strong immune system, then you are not going to die and you are probably not going to develop a serious illness. You may get the flu, but we've all possibly had the flu in our life at least once. So how do you watch and take care of your overall health? Well, first of all, folks, you've got to be eating fruits and vegetables and food of all different colors. If you are someone, I was in the grocery store just 2 days ago in the midst of the pandemic, and I must admit, I saw one grocery cart with 12 liter bottles of Mountain Dew in it, Mountain Dew soda, as well as numerous containers of Oreos. Folks, if you want to stay healthy and you want to promote the strength of your immune system, your grocery cart cannot look like that. It's got to be full of plants, fruits, and vegetables of all the colors of the rainbow: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple. And you need to be eating 7 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables every single day. And I'll talk about things like terpenes later, which are antiviral. And that is one thing that comes from plants, which is something that's going to protect the plant and therefore going to protect you. You also do need adequate protein, of course. So the thing is, you need to eat a balanced diet of plants, fruits, and vegetables. Yes, some animal protein if you're someone that eats animal protein. I realize there are many people out there that might be vegetarian or vegan, so that's fine. But make sure you're still getting complete proteins from plants as well. And also, we all need good, healthy fats in our diet. So first, start with diet. And also, folks, please drink plenty of water. That person with 12 liters of Mountain Dew in their cart has got to have inflammation in their body, and their immune system is not functioning optimally. Sugar is a neurotoxin and inflammatory agent and destroys your immune system. So if you're a soda drinker, please stop now and drink mostly water. And also, fruit juice is more sugar-filled than soda. So stop drinking fruit juices unless they're diluted, maybe a quarter of a glass of fruit juice and the rest water. Also, we've all got to get adequate rest. Go home, stay home, rest as much as you can, and hold the hand of your loved ones. And folks, the fact that we actually can go home right now and rest and be at home and try and deep breathe and, yes, stay informed, but also don't panic. Again, only 2%. That's the typical flu. It's just this is a pandemic, again, because it's a new virus. And I'll talk in a little while about ways to manage your personal stress levels, and also incorporating some gentle, mild stretching on a daily basis is extremely important. Now, why have we seen that the quarantine time is 14 days? Well, quarantine is usually established for the incubation period of any communicable disease. And therefore, the time span is the time during which people have been known to develop illness after the exposure, meaning if they start to develop illness in those 14 days, that's during the typical incubation period of the time when they present with symptoms. The period of quarantine being used for coronavirus 19 is the 14 days from the last date of the person's possible exposure. And this is because 14 days is the longest incubation period seen for similar coronaviruses and the amount of time we think people have started to illustrate symptoms. Now, some people, as we know, are at a higher risk for having a serious response to COVID-19. And these people, as I say, are typically over 40 years old and have an underlying medical condition that may increase the risk of serious COVID-19 illness. And the following conditions may put you at risk for having a more serious illness from this virus. Number one, blood disorders, such as sickle cell disease, which is a chronic illness for folks with blood disorders, and somebody, let's say, on blood thinners. Chronic kidney disease, which would also possibly put someone at risk, particularly if someone is on dialysis. Another one would be chronic liver disease, people with chronic hepatitis or cirrhosis of the liver. People with autoimmune diseases or people with cancer that have already immune compromised systems and receiving chemotherapy would obviously be at more risk, or someone, of course, whose immune system has been depleted with medicines because they're receiving an organ transplant or a bone marrow transplant. People obviously with HIV or AIDS, or people who are on chronic corticosteroids or other immunosuppressant medications because they have, let's say, an autoimmune condition. Someone who is currently pregnant or has had a recent pregnancy within the last 2 weeks would be at increased risk. Endocrine disorders such as diabetes will put someone at increased risk. Metabolic disorders, where someone's energy system or their metabolism is off, or metabolic diseases, would put someone at increased risk. Heart disease, such as congestive heart failure or coronary artery disease, someone who's had a recent heart attack, for example. And finally, the most probably at risk would be people with definitive underlying chronic lung disease, because this virus predominantly does attack the lungs. So anyone with asthma or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or chronic bronchitis or emphysema would be at increased risk. There is currently, folks, as we know, no vaccine to prevent the coronavirus disease 2019. It is way too early for that. It's going to take scientists quite a while. That is not an option. So the best way to prevent illness is to avoid being exposed to this virus altogether, especially if you are someone with a chronic underlying condition. So let's talk a little bit more specifically about some of the ways to physically prevent this illness. Let's talk about cleaning your hands often. Folks, you need to wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. So don't just do it cursory. Make sure you stand there. And 20 seconds, folks, is a lot longer than we realize. So maybe you want to stand there and count slowly to 20. Now, you especially want to wash your hands after you've been in public places, after blowing your nose, of course, or coughing or sneezing. Now, if soap and water are not readily available, again, you can use hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol, and you can make it for yourself. Again, with isopropyl alcohol, a minimum of 60% alcohol, and aloe vera gel. You should keep hand sanitizer handy at the entries to your home. So as soon as you walk through the door, use it and sanitize your hands. And also put some in the little cup holder or in the, you know, the door handle holder of your car. So as soon as you enter your car, you should be sanitizing your hands. Now, the other thing, of course, folks, is the only way to really contract it is to go touching your face with virus on your hands, or again, respiratory droplets. So avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Now, I realize this is very difficult. We are known to touch our faces over 90 times a day, and it's such a subconscious thing. But again, the more conscious we are of our movements now that this is part of our lives, the better off we'll be. And of course, avoid close contact with sick people and surfaces where you know people have been ill. Put distance between yourself and other people, especially if you know it is in your community and your community is showing community transmission. And please be sure to avoid interacting with people you know in your family have chronic conditions, or your friends, or people you love. Avoid also grasping door handles, if possible. Use, for example, your knuckle to turn on light switches or press elevator buttons. Use your elbow, hip, or foot to open a door if you possibly can do it, or use a paper towel to grab onto the handle. If you can get access to them, use disposable either latex or nitrile gloves at the gas station to grab onto the dispenser at the pump and to put it back. Now, if you become ill, please stay home. Do not go out in public at all. If you think you have COVID-19, call your primary care doctor's office or your local hospital for guidance before you go. Call before you go to the hospital so that they can properly prepare and direct you to get appropriate care and testing as needed. The hospitals are not the answer for you when you first present with any illness. You have to realize that if 5% of people are going to develop serious illness, and if all of those 5% show up at a hospital, even those are people with serious illness, the hospitals are going to quickly become overwhelmed. So if you have first signs of a dry cough and a fever and myalgias, you are not in serious danger right now. Any flu, you should be staying home, resting, drinking plenty of fluids, and hydrating and caring for yourself, not running to the doctor's office or to a hospital. Most people will be able to treat and recover from COVID-19, folks, at home. Now, if you do have a cough, please cover your mouth and nose with a tissue when you cough or sneeze, or use, if you have to, the inside of your elbow, but the virus then is going to be in the fabric of your clothes, so you'd be better off to use a tissue. Throw used tissues, of course, immediately in the trash, and immediately wash your hands again with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Or use hand sanitizer. Now, who needs to be wearing a face mask? Folks, if you are sick and you have to go out in public, yes, you should be wearing a face mask, not for your protection, for the protection of people you may come in contact with, because you're the one that's going to be spreading the respiratory droplets. If you are not sick, you do not need to wear a face mask, unless you are taking care of someone who is sick. That you may need one if you can find one. But folks, you must realize again that this illness, because none of us have seen it before, is going to have a large amount of people getting ill, and hospitals and healthcare providers are going to be overwhelmed. And the CDC is realizing that the face masks may be in short supply and they should be saved for caregivers and health professionals within hospitals and things as much as possible. Now, as far as cleaning surfaces, clean and disinfect frequently touched surfaces every day, multiple times a day. Where does this include? It includes tables, doorknobs, light switches, countertops, handles, desks, phones, keyboards, toilets, faucets, and sinks. If surfaces are dirty, of course, clean them. Use detergent or soap and water prior to even disinfecting them. Use disinfectant wipes when shopping to wipe the handle of the grocery cart and the child seat, if applicable. Also wipe down any seats that are new to you. Now, to disinfect, most common EPA-registered household disinfectants will work. And use any disinfectant that's appropriate for the surface you are cleaning. Now, folks, if you need more information, please Google the CDC, Center for Disease Control Guidance, for any further information. Now, another topic I really would like to cover with you is some other supplements that can be taken to help prevent the illness in the first place, or possibly decrease, or what I should say is boost your immune system to be able to handle the virus better. And the number one, I would say, when it comes to prevention or boosting your immune system is vitamin C. Vitamin C, folks, can be taken to what's called bowel tolerance. What that means is I would start out at as much as 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams every day. And then you could even go up to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 milligrams, as much as you want until you develop loose or stools or diarrhea. When you develop loose stools, then that dose is reached your personal bowel tolerance, and you need to back off of the vitamin C, back to a dose that did not cause bowel tolerance, okay? So again, you can take vitamin C over the counter in a crystal or in a capsule up to as much as what's called bowel tolerance. Another antiviral or antimicrobial is called propolis, P-R-O-P-O-L-I-S, propolis, which is actually, folks, bee glue. When honeybees or bees produce a resinous mixture in their hives, it's made with propolis. And propolis has been found to be antiviral and antimicrobial. So you could be looking online for supplements that include propolis by itself, or many immune boosting supplements may have a combination of supplements in it, and propolis is one you want to be able to try and find. Three, you also want to make sure your vitamin D level is optimized. And folks, so many of us have a low vitamin D, or at least a low normal vitamin D. And you want to optimize that. And studies have shown that between 2,000 and 4,000 international units of vitamin D3 is not going to make anyone toxic. Because remember, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, and so it can become stored in your body and can get to a toxic or too high level. But studies have shown that between 2,000 and 4,000 international units a day is not typically going to get anyone into any trouble from a toxic perspective. So I would recommend at this time, with what's going on with this pandemic, I would be taking and recommend about 4,000 international units a day of vitamin D3 for the average person. If you know you have been deficient in the past, or you've recently had a lab test that showed you were deficient in vitamin D, man, you could be taking as much as between 5 and 10,000 international units of vitamin D. Now, some research shows that you want to combine vitamin D3 with chondroitin sulfate. Chondroitin sulfate, if you're someone who has joint pain, is familiar with, you know, glucosamine, chondroitin, and MSM. So if you are someone taking one of those combination mixtures or chondroitin by itself, you want to take as much as chondroitin sulfate, 500 milligrams twice a day. Now, number 1, 2, 3, 4, another supplement that has been known to help decrease viral load and also has been shown to block certain enzymes called furans, F-U-R-I-N-S, furans, as an anti-corona strategy in the past, is called andrographis. Andrographis, spelled A-N-D-R-O-G-R-A-P-H-I-S, andrographis, is a plant native to India and Sri Lanka. Now, just be aware that andrographis is also shown to thin the blood. So if you're on blood thinners, or if you're also taking fish oil and you take andrographis, just be aware that it could thin the blood, and you may show, if you're bruising more or bleeding more, then obviously be aware. Also, andrographis may lower blood pressure. So if you're someone with low blood pressure to begin with, realize that andrographis may also lower blood pressure. Another supplement that you may want to realize may be helpful for you are called terpenes. And terpenes, folks, are another antiviral that is known to be in many different plants. These are organic hydrocarbons, and they contribute to the flavor and scent of most plants. And terpenes or terpenoids, these two terms can be used interchangeably. Terpenoids are denatured by oxidation of terpenes. And again, these are in many different plants. There are greater than 20,000 different kinds of plants that have terpenes or terpenoids in them. And these terpenes or terpenoids help protect plants against bacteria, fungi, and of course, microbes. So if it's going to protect the plant and you eat them, it's probably going to help protect us. So some fruits and vegetables that are high in terpenoids or terpenes are mangoes, apples, citrus, broccoli. Many spices also have terpenes or terpenoids. And finally, folks, if those of you that are out there that have been ingesting hemp or CBD oil, CBD oil and hemp has high terpenes or terpenoids. So keep taking your CBD because it's also possibly helping to protect you against this present coronavirus 2019. One other supplement that I have been using for over a year now, and I am a huge proponent of it, is by a company called Life Vantage, and it's called Protandim. And the reason I like this so much is not only does it have five compounds in it that will boost your immune system and improve your energy and improve your cognition, such as the five following: milk thistle, bacopa, ashwagandha, green tea extract, and turmeric. But also this product, Protandim, has been shown in PubMed clinical trials to reduce a person's free radicals by as much as 30%. Folks, free radicals are what cause oxidative stress and injure our immune systems and cause us to get ill and also to age. So if you want to reduce your age, if you want to improve your immune system, if you want to reduce your oxidative stress by as much as 30%, you're going to want to look into getting some Protandim. Now, those are different supplements that are going to help you boost your immune system and hopefully prevent this illness. Now, what about if and when we contract this coronavirus 2019? Well, three treatments that have been shown in studies and they've been used in China and other countries in this, actually was used one of these, chloroquine phosphate. Chloroquine phosphate, folks, is an anti-malaria medicine. It's been used for decades when people who have malaria or to prevent malaria, when people travel to areas that are indigenous to have mosquitoes that produce malaria. But they've used chloroquine phosphate in China, and a study has shown that it decreased the severity of the infection of this viral illness, coronavirus 2019. And it is recommended that chloroquine phosphate 500 milligrams twice a day for 10 days is anti-inflammatory and it is antiviral. Now you may develop side effects of cramps. You might develop nausea, vomiting, headache, or diarrhea. So realize that those can be side effects to chloroquine phosphate. But again, chloroquine phosphate at 500 milligrams twice a day for 10 days is something that has been shown to decrease the severity of coronavirus 2019. And also, you chloroquine phosphate, in my research, has shown you may be able to get this without a prescription. And so you can look into seeing if you can get this over the counter at a pharmacy. Now, another treatment, once any of us develop this virus, is again, vitamin C. And again, go up as high as you need to go with vitamin C to bowel tolerance if you are at home. Also, if you have access to a medical facility or a medical provider that can do IV vitamin C, IV vitamin C has been shown to help decrease the severity of coronavirus 2019. And finally, the third oral medicine, other than, of course, antibiotics if someone develops a pneumonia or other co-infection, would be something called Alinia, A-L-I-N-I-A. Another word for it is nitazoxanide, which is N-I-T-A-Z-O-X-A-N-I-D-E. And nitazoxanide can be taken at 1,000 milligrams twice a day for 10 days. Now, what the heck is Alinia or nitazoxanide? This is an anti-protozoa medicine. It must be prescribed by a healthcare provider. And it is typically used in parasite infections, like someone who has developed Giardia or Cryptosporidium, like traveler's diarrhea. It is typically well tolerated, and it has been shown to decrease the severity of coronavirus 2019. Now, folks, the final thing I wanted to just take a few minutes and talk about is this level of fear and stress and downright panic sometimes that all of us are bound to feel. We are all human, and if you watch the news, which we do need to do to know what's going on, but also if we watch the news and we read and we get on the internet constantly, the fear seems like it can get out of control. Now, folks, remember, yes, this is a virus that none of us have seen before, and that is true. And some of us are going to become seriously ill. There is no, you know, that is a reality. But we can do things to take control of this situation. We can be conscious. We can wash our hands and all the things we've talked about. We can take supplements. We can eat well and get our rest. We can stay away from the general population and stay home with our loved ones. Wow. When's the last time you had a really good reason to stay home and stop running all the time and just say no? And be at rest and take care of yourself. Let's start looking at this as a time to take note and maybe, you know, screen ourselves and ask ourselves and contemplate, you know, how is my life going right now? And are things the way I want them to be? Am I emphasizing my own health? Am I emphasizing my family relationships and my friends? Am I taking care of them, and are we taking care of each other? And another thing, folks, I recommend to every single human being on this earth is every single one of us must take time every single day to breathe and quiet our minds. And if it fits, then pray. Meaning if you're a religious person, then pray whatever prayers come from the religion you follow. If you're a spiritual person, then prayer may fit as well to whoever you believe or whatever you believe runs this universe. I am an extremely spiritual person. I've trained in shamanism and energy medicine. And every single day of my life, I at least take 5 minutes to quiet my mind, deep breathe, thank the universe for all the gifts it has bestowed on me throughout my life. And also right now, thanking the universe for the protection I do have right this minute, and for the health I have right this minute, and for the fact that the universe has given me the ability to be consistent with taking care of myself. And so I strongly believe that I and all of you are capable of surviving this infectious process, this pandemic, and that we need to stand together. We may not be able to hold hands right now, physically, but we can hold hands virtually and stay connected through the internet and through podcasts like this, and continue to love one another and realize that we will overcome, we will survive, and life is gonna get back to normal. But also make sure you take the time to ask yourself, is the quote unquote normal you've been living up until this situation the normal you continue to wish to live? Or are you gonna make some changes to maybe either improve your health over the long run, or to improve your relationships, or to decide and make different, interchange the priorities within your life? So I wish health and quick healing to anyone and all of us when and if coronavirus 2019 comes to our homes. God bless, and everyone stay healthy.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the episode and the Discover Health Functional Medicine Center, visit us on our website, discoverhealthfmc.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode and will join us again next time so you can truly live and play as long as you want.